Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, the daily podcast brought to you by the team behind Squawk Box.
NYC, this is CNBC Control 2.
CNBC's essential morning show.
PCR 2.
Every day, get the best stories, debate, and analysis from the biggest names in business and politics.
All right, we're coming to our next.
Today on Squawk Pod, President Trump says a trade deal with China, it could wait.
The China trade deal is dependent on one thing. Do I want to make it?
An Elon Musk tweet lands the Tesla CEO in court. Yale's Jeff Sonnenfeld weighs in.
We have boards that seem unable to direct genius founders. How does a board rein in these Twitter tantrums?
And the crisis hitting campus, inside higher ed's high stakes to staying in business.
Students with a lot of money available to them often tend to demand from a school some expensive things. That's why we see water parks in some colleges.
Those stories and more, Cyber Monday, Latin lessons, and a tariff on champagne. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. It's Tuesday, December 3rd, 2019. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Snap back goodbye in 3, 2, 1, wipe it.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square.
We can give it more than that.
We are live.
From the
NASDAQ in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is out today, but we've got Tom Farley filling in. He is the CEO of Farpoint Acquisition Group, former president of the NYSE, and of course a CNBC contributor. And Tom, it's great to have you back.
Good morning. Today. Great to be here.
First up today on the podcast, President Trump says it might be better to wait until after the 2020 election for a trade deal with China. In London, where he's traveled for celebrations marking NATO's 70th anniversary, the president told reporters early Tuesday morning there is no deadline for a deal to end the tit-for-tat tariff war between Beijing and Washington. The next tariff deadline is just around the corner, December 15th, and if the two sides have no deal by then, additional U.S. levies on Chinese exports go into effect.
I guess we have the soundbite. Let's get to Willem, President Trump's China trade comments, moving the futures. Let's get to Willem, Marks in London. Willem.
Yeah, Joe, so the president arrived here late last night, stayed at the U.S. ambassador's residence, and this morning there he met with the Secretary General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg. Ahead of their breakfast, he gave some public comments, including on China, saying he wants to wait until the deal is right. Take a listen.
The China trade deal is dependent on one thing. Do I want to make it? I have no deadline, no. In some ways, I think it's better to wait till after the election. You want to know the truth? I think in some ways it's better to wait till after the election with China. But I'm not going to say that. I just think that. I just tell you.
So, you know, we've had discussions over the last couple of months about a phase one or preliminary trade deal. Clearly, we're expecting tariffs to kick up on the 15th of December if that preliminary trade deal is not concluded. And based on what the president is saying this morning, it doesn't sound like he's in much of a rush, guys.
It's an old technique, Cicero. Yeah, I'm not going to, in some way, I'm not going to say it, but in some ways it might be, I'm not going to point out you know nothing, but in some way, right? You can say it without saying it, and that's what he just did. I think. I don't know. It's not that different than what he said all along, Willem, but we go back and forth. It was interesting, the take from the New York Times versus the Wall Street Journal. Wall Street Journal just plays it straight. Trump to levy tariffs on Brazil, Argentina. The Times, you know, they'd never editorialize on the front page. Trump's adding South Americans to his trade war. So no president, no, just adding, you know, this clown in the White House, adding. But anyway, just different ways of saying the same thing. But I guess, how many continents do we have now? We got Asia, Europe.
South America, not Australia yet.
Canada's part of North America.
We took a few shots at Australia. We let them know.
Well, these people better get their act together. They want to trade with the superpower, okay?
I agree with them, though, in some ways.
It is better to wait till after
the election, because there is this question of, is somebody more China-friendly going to be in the White House?
Particularly if the Chinese are not being cooperative, which is what it sounded like for the last couple of weeks. If they have kind of taken more of a hardline stance and are not going to agree to anything, okay, if you're going to have a super skinny deal that basically says nothing other than we will not put more additional tariffs on you, then maybe it's better to wait.
Hmm. I just wish we really, really knew where the pain is being felt, because we have both sides presented on a daily basis.
Like, this is no issue for China. They can just go on.
That's what I mean. You've heard the other side,
though. I just don't buy it. I don't believe it. I think she's under significant pressure. Hong Kong, the tariffs, declining economy.
We forget that, you know, our per capita GDP is like $60,000. China's up and coming, but it's still like $10,000. They got a long way to go before their people have the same quality of life. And they can't come fast enough for that.
He's under pressure from several different constituencies. He's under pressure for what happens to them economically, but then he's also facing the hardliners who do not want him to come up with a deal.
And he's facing Hong Kong, and he's facing, right. You know, somehow navigating a country that someday has to become, in terms of human rights, it has to come out of the dark ages.
And someday has to become, the economy has to become consumer-led, and devaluing
exactly.
currency is in a way to become consumer-led.
And truly market.
Do you think it's possible that the president made that comment today? Right, he didn't say it, he just thought it.
Right.
As we just heard.
Said he
as a trial,
it.
As
weird.
A trial
it was,
balloon.
It was one of those cartoon. It was one of those bubbles above his head. I'm thinking, wait till after.
But do you think it was a trial balloon to see how the market would react to help him decide whether or not to cut a lesser deal by December 15th?
I think it's more China knowing, hanging on, you know, I think it's more massaging
negotiating.
Them. Yeah. Softening them up and saying, look, you don't want
to
do it, then you can wait till.
Because
isn't the election in November? So does China want to wait another year with exports where they are? And
what the markets want to know is, are there going to be additional tariffs that are put on in 2 weeks' time?
That's a huge question.
Does that come or not? And, you know, originally China was not only asking for those tariffs to not be added, but to unroll the tariffs that are already existing. I think
right.
It's probably pretty clear that without a deal, there's no way those tariffs are getting pulled back. But if the additional tranche of tariffs come, that could be significant for economies here and there. Cyber Monday sales are expected to have hit a record $9.2 billion. That's up nearly 17% from a year ago. That's according to new data from Adobe Analytics. Courtney Reagan joins us right now. She's got more on that front. And Courtney, you're back. It's good to see
you. I'm back. Here we are. Cyber Monday is now officially behind us, but really just a couple hours ago, Becky. And like you pointed out, that number actually a bit below the initial expectations for Cyber Monday for those four results, but still a record. As expected, those peak hours were pretty late, around 11 p.m. Eastern Time. A third of the sales were done on mobile devices on Cyber Monday. So some of the top sellers include Frozen 2 toys, LOL Surprise Dolls, Nerf products, Madden 20, Nintendo Switch, Jedi Fallen Order, Samsung TVs, Fire TV, AirPods, and air fryers. Got to figure out how to use one of those. Cyber Monday was once again Amazon's biggest ever day worldwide. That seems to be the stat they give us every year. This time they did tell us more than 25 million items were ordered on Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined. The 2 days, the biggest ever for toys on Amazon too. Amazon says Cyber Monday was the biggest day ever for fashion on the site. We know apparel has been a big push for the retailer. Amazon sold millions more devices this year. Bestsellers, again, include the Echo Dot and that Fire TV stick. Interesting, though, Adobe also said on Black Friday states that recorded more than 2 inches of snow saw a 7% increase in online sales. And I think that's interesting because when I've asked about whether snow helps online sales in the past, at least on non-holiday shopping days anyway, there really hasn't been a discernible difference. But I guess if it's Black Friday and you're going to shop anyways and it's snowing, then you will move online. But typically, that doesn't happen.
I went to the mall yesterday to actually buy things because I figured it'd be a great day. It was snowing. Nobody was there.
Yeah.
It was the easiest way to move around. It's probably the easiest it's going to be for the rest of the holidays.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, retailers want it cold, but they want it dry. They don't want it raining. They don't want it slushy. And they don't really want snow because it does deter people from going out. But we haven't always seen those sales translate online, interestingly enough. I've looked into that.
Uh-huh.
When you have big snow days in New York, do then people shift online and it hasn't happened.
Sometimes they just lose the sales.
Exactly. Yeah. They just lose the sales. But it did seem to happen, at least on Black Friday.
I'm kind of feeling that I've been conditioned to think I'm going to get these deals all the way through the rest of the holiday season. Is that right, or did I miss my opportunity?
You know, I think every retailer gives himself a little bit of leeway, and we've asked a lot of them about that going into this fourth quarter and where their inventory levels are and really
pretty high, right?
how much room they've given themselves sort of in their earnings guidance to discount those prices to respond to the competitive atmosphere. And almost all the retailers say, look, we always give ourselves a little bit of room. I actually think the inventories are looking better this year than in years past. And remember, we have a shortened season. So
I know, that's why I feel like they'll
careful.
Get desperate. They're going to have to unload this stuff at some
they
point.
They might. But then again, I only have 3 gifts, and it's December 3rd. So I also feel kind of crunched. I feel nervous about waiting, I guess, is my way of looking
Joe
at it.
Joe has no idea what you're talking about. He never buys a single present.
Right.
That's
wow.
a lot for him.
I've thought about at some point thinking about the gifts. That's good. Free.
I'm glad Santa does all that work for you.
Santa does a lot of work. A couple of corporate headlines for you. Steelmaker AK Steel is being bought by mining company Cleveland Cliffs in a stock swap deal. AK Steel shareholders will receive 0.4 Cleveland Cliffs shares for every share they now hold. U.S. gene therapy company Audentes Therapeutics agreed to a takeover by Japan's Astellas Pharma for about $3 billion in cash. The deal is worth $60 per share, more than double yesterday's close for Audentes. And
Do you know the Latin root of Audentes?
I took 4 years of Latin in case I ever moved to Latinia, which that was supposedly going to prepare me to speak any language. And you know what I remember? Agricola, Agricolae. Porto, Portavi, Portatus. That's about it.
4 years.
That's
four years.
About it.
I thought maybe you could decide.
Quid pro quo. Quid pro quo, but now I use the word bribery because it polls better.
By the way, audentis is a Latin word. It comes from a Latin word, audens, which means daring, venturing, risking, or being eager for battle.
Now we know. So there we have it.
You were right.
I don't think I ever, that may have not.
Crossed your.
No, I mean, Porto's carry. Agricola as a farmer. That's about it, unfortunately. No, there's some legal terms, I guess, right? That I
quit pro.
I know another one. A lot of our segments go on ad nauseum. I think that's
all right. Let's end this one.
Farley, do you know why you slap a punitive duty on something? You know why you slap it? Why it's always a slap? Do you know why it's a slap?
Yes.
I'll tell you why it's a slap. You do.
Well, I just infer from the word that it's you're angry
why
at somebody.
No. When the stuff used to be coming in,
the bill
they would
on
actually
the ship.
Slap
the duty.
The piece of paper.
Right there.
What'd you say? Duty.
Bengals.
The Trump administration, right there, said it may slap. You could say levy, couldn't you?
You could.
Okay. But slap
it's not nearly
is so
as active.
Much.
Impose.
No, slap. They're slapping because these are punitive. Duties of up to 100% on $2.4 billion of imports of French champagne, among other things, handbags, cheese, targeting France, champagne and cheese, right? And other products. The move is a response to France's new 3% digital services tax on companies with more than $27 million in French revenue. The U.S. Trade Rep's office says its investigation found that the French tax was unusually burdensome for U.S. companies, including Google, Facebook, Apple, and Amazon. Here's President Trump speaking about 2 hours ago at the NATO summit in London.
Emmanuel had an idea. Let's tax those companies. Well, they're American companies. I'm not going to let people take advantage of American companies, because if anyone's going to take advantage of the American companies, it's going to be us. It's not going to be France.
Shares of several French luxury goods stocks fell on the news. He's very blunt.
Well, he even said he doesn't like a lot of these companies.
Right.
He's talking about protecting Amazon and others, but he even said while he was doing it, I don't even like some of these companies.
Likes Apple. I think he kind of likes Facebook.
You said champagne, but not that. I didn't hear you say
Champagne.
No, Burgundy.
I didn't see that. No, is that your thing?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
It's delicious. But there were already tariffs
that had been,
that had been slapped.
I wonder if there's some additional slapping going on.
I drink that once in a while. I'm in a... You know my life now. Finger up, Chardonnay.
You're mostly white. I was going to say mostly white wine.
It's pathetic. Anyway, that's where I am. Beer, it's just too much volume.
This will be interesting because it's a big export market.
Yeah.
For France.
Yeah. So I
wonder if they might reconsider.
You're the big
digital tech.
You're like the Grasso Fat Cat NYSE guy. So you got like the $800 red wine. Is that your thing?
No. I'm a simpleton. I'm from Bowie, Maryland.
Oh, I know
son
that.
Of a. Son of a government employee.
You were the president of
my mother was a Catholic nun for 5 years.
Wait a second. You don't go
she
to
was?
One of these.
Yeah, my mother was
really?
A Catholic nun for 5 years. She left the night before her final vows. She lived in a cloistered
Wait
convent.
A second.
Because she met your dad?
Ostensibly, no. As the story goes, they met after she left the convent.
Oh, that sounds like,
age 18
that sounds
to
like a little revisionist history there, perhaps. Your dad wasn't a priest.
My father had just lost his leg fighting in Vietnam. He was recovering
oh my
in
God.
A hospital. She leaves the convent. She's at home in a spare bedroom. She had lost all her friends, and my grandmother set the two up.
And
do you want to lay down on a couch?
And they fell in love.
That's a great story.
It is. Yeah, they got married.
I can't believe you're letting us know all this. That's really nice. Yeah. I had no idea.
So, no, I wasn't drinking.
You were. You're the NYSE president. You're going to those fat, all those leather chairs with the things along the side. Yeah, you were.
No.
My mother was a nun for a while.
Is that right?
No.
I was adopted, so I was in an orphanage where basically the nuns were my My uncle was a priest, but anyway. Your uncle was a priest, too?
Yeah, Thomas Wells. My name's Thomas Wells Farley. Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good.
I like this sharing.
This is really, but I don't know why I'm getting a little teary, but we're really opening up here. Next time we're going to couch out here for you. You're okay with all this?
I mean, what's the next block?
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, Elon Musk's Twitter talk that's putting him on trial.
You remember the Nixon tapes and we had epithet deleted? Why do we know everything that everyone's thinking? Why do they put it on Twitter?
This is one guy who really should have hired Rosemary Woods to delete some things for him.
We're back. This is Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back.
Every compliment comes.
Welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. You're a natural. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Becky Quick. Tom Farley's in. Andrew's off today, and Tom Farley.
Playing Andrew Ross Sorkin today.
Yeah.
I'm doing my best.
Yeah,
Joe says we're
You're right
the
there.
Person.
You're just, we need that that component, that the whole yin and yang thing, and Becky's sitting moderating. Anyway,
somebody sent me a referee hat, no joke. They did. Honestly, mailed it to the office.
It's been more than a year since the world watched a group of boys rescued from a flooded cave in Thailand. Now, something that Tesla CEO Elon Musk said during that crisis in July 2018 is landing him in a California courtroom set to begin trial today.
Jane Wells is in California as well. She joins us with more on what to expect. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Becky. Yeah, we're heading down to federal court shortly. Musk could be on the stand potentially as early as this afternoon in what is expected to be a fiery trial pitting the richest man in Los Angeles against a British cave expert. Now, did Elon Musk imply Vernon Unsworth was a pedophile? And did he take, quote, reasonable care to determine whether that was true before he said it? Jury's going to have to decide that. This all goes back over a year when Musk's SpaceX sent a mini sub to help rescue those 12 Thai boys and their soccer coach in a cave. It ended up not being used. Unsworth was there, called the sub a PR stunt, saying Musk could, quote, stick his submarine where it hurts. Well, Musk then went to Twitter saying he never saw Unsworth on scene in Thailand and then tweeted this, sorry, pedo guy, you really did ask for it, followed by another tweet, betcha a signed dollar, it's true. Now, Musk later deleted the pedo guy tweet and apologized, but doubled down in a series of emails to BuzzFeed suggesting Unsworth was a child rapist. Now, Unsworth is sued for defamation. He actually wants to use those BuzzFeed emails as evidence of Musk's state of mind that Musk wasn't joking around when he said pedo guy. Musk has said pedo guy is shorthand in South Africa for a creepy old man, not a pedophile. Unsworth is seeking compensatory damages of at least $75,000. That's it, meaning this trial in a U.S. federal courthouse is going to probably cost more than the damages. He's also seeking punitive damages, which are meant to punish wrongdoing. And he has asked, he's pushing for Musk's financial records to see how rich he really is. Musk says that is unnecessary. It's clear he's worth over $1 billion. Is he worth $24 billion? We don't know. We'll see if they get anywhere with getting those financial records, which always fascinates me. Mediation went nowhere. No settlement so far. And at 9 a.m. Pacific, the trial starts. Guys.
Jane, that's quite a dance. It's pedo from the ancient Greek as child. So, creepy old man in South, that's BS. You know, we know the derivation of that word. Means child.
Your Honor, I would like to dismiss juror number 12.
So I'm out. South Africa, what did he say? Where is it supposedly means
South
creepy?
South Africa, where he's from.
South Africa. And I don't know if that
not
is.
From the Greek?
I don't know. They'll have to present evidence that, other things in local cultures, the slang-wise, mean different things. They're going to have to present evidence,
But if you look up the derivation of just the term pedo, not even in a foul way, just in where from the Greek, I can't read Greek, but it...
But Musk is also pushing for jury instructions to be clear that jurors can determine whether or not he was saying something as a statement of fact or as a insult, and whether that then is defamation. So,
you know, what about the emails? Do you think those will definitely make their way into evidence? Because that's pretty damning.
Oh, so far the judge is letting the judge is letting them in. What's interesting is Unsworth was originally suing for defamation with the emails and the tweets. For some reason, is just focusing on the tweets now, but wanting to use the emails where Musk refers to him as a child rapist. As state of mind. So that's really it. Was Musk joking or was he being serious in his accusation?
Well, he also hired a detective to investigate the guy. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that kind of shows this was more than just a casual insult.
Is there an impact is there an impact on Tesla, the business here, Jane?
So far, I don't. I mean, So he has to pay $75,000. So maybe the jury has punitive damages. It's all out of his pocket or whatever. I don't see it being large enough to have an impact. And my goodness, if you know, with Elon Musk is the master of diverting attention to other things like my shiny new truck.
Why didn't he just settle? I don't get it. Why would mediation go nowhere?
This is so fascinating, Becky, that federal taxpayers are footing the bill to use a courtroom for this today. Over two guys who couldn't come to some sort of agreement through mediation. Look, often a settlement comes about after you pick a jury. You take a look at the jury and one side or the other decides, oh, you know what, let's go ahead and settle. By the way, Unsworth is also suing in court in UK. So there's two lawsuits going on at the same time.
Jane, thank you. Great to see you. Keep us up to speed today. For more on Musk's legal challenges, let's welcome Jeff Sonnenfeld. He's the Yale School of Management's Senior Associate Dean for Leadership Studies. He's president of Yale's Chief Executive Leadership Institute, also a CNBC contributor. And, Jeff, what do you think?
Well, Becky, I think after that fabulous discussion that the four of you just had, you might wonder what more is there to add. And there are some nuances. Jane wondered why they were dropping the emails. Well, they're dropping the emails to narrow the defamation suit just on the tweets, as I understand it, because the emails were labeled off the record, confidential, so that his intention on the emails weren't so clear to have a mass publicity the way he clearly wanted to publish these tweets because he did so. And that's that nuance. Tom asked a really good question. What's the impact on the company? Hi, Tom, by the way. And I think that is compelling. It's a distraction, as you point out, a master distraction. But it also just shows another one of these boards that has fear of founder issues, whether or not we're looking at Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg or, of course, looking at the problems with Adam Neumann and WeWorks, or Jack Dorsey is going off on some strange adventure to Africa that makes a lot of sense for somebody else in the company to do, but to disappear for 6 months to leave both Twitter and Square as the CEO of two companies. We have boards that seem unable to direct genius founders. And in this case, until this past several months where Musk seems to have cleaned up his act, we had a fairly reckless person out of control. And that's the significance, Tom, is how does a board kind of rein in these Twitter tantrums?
Jeff, great to see you again. I had a question about that exact kind of meltdown that Elon had around about a year and a half ago. There was the whole funding secured, 420. There was a board that was a bit lame, quite frankly. Has the company made improvements in its governance in the past year and a half from your perspective?
Yeah, it seems that he was making mockery of the initial SEC settlement, which, amazing, this was happening at the same time, is that 420 stock dangling, which seemed not to be based on any facts in terms of the private placement, as that melted down, it was the same time that Musk was coming out with these nonsensical attacks on Pedo Man. And you're wondering, Joe, you're wondering what else could be a derivation of pedo. One of the producers here, Jessica, suggested that maybe he was talking about pedestrian and maybe somebody who just walks around a lot.
You're in a whole different area of perversion with the foot. So I don't, you know, we don't need to, right? I mean, they don't need to, that doesn't help. That doesn't help.
I don't even understand that. What are you talking about?
Hey, Jeff, you know what I was also thinking of, Jeff? Do you remember the good old days? You remember the Nixon tapes and we had epithet deleted? Why do we know everything that everyone's thinking? Why do they put it on Twitter? I mean, we used to have some decorum, didn't we? The social media.
This is one guy who really should have hired Rosemary Woods to delete something
to delete for him. Something.
He was having a meltdown.
Twitter is so, it's like nitroglycerin. You know what I mean? You got to
when you see it, you just don't put things on it.
It's self-imposed. He was having a tantrum. He could have gotten himself out of this, and it's completely unforced errors. Instead of coming up with a settlement, as we know, is the best settlements usually are in the courthouse steps. So maybe something will happen before midday today. But surely this didn't have to happen. It's foolish. It's a tantrum. And, you know, we had a heroic story. It was 18 days to rescue these poor kids, these 12 stranded soccer players and their coach. And that's what should have been celebrated, instead distracting the attention onto this. And here we have this successful launch, or at least the dangling of the prospective launch of the Cybertruck, with a quarter of a million folks putting $100 down, fully refundable, to buy. And we've seen that some successes out there with that have surprised people with a profitable last quarter. Why distract with this kind of nonsense that he gets into?
Jeff, yeah. It's great to see you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.
Coming up, you know about student debt, but college debt?
One in five, 20% of small private colleges are in what they call fundamental financial stress.
A brewing crisis in higher education, straight ahead on Squawk Pod. Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
Three, two, sorry, push on Joe, up on him, cue.
Students aren't the only ones crushed by debt. Private colleges are under stress, and some are going out of business. Our Scott Cohn joins us now from one Ohio school that is determined to buck the trend. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, they're not going to go out of business here, Joe. This is Hiram College. It's a small liberal arts school about 40 miles outside of Cleveland. Their answer to all of this is to literally change the definition of liberal arts, which seems kind of drastic. But here's what they're up against. These colleges are closing left and right. According to Moody's, they're expecting 15 colleges, when all is said and done this year, to close. That is the most in years, and three times the rate of just 10 years ago. In fact, Moody says one in five, 20% of small private colleges are in what they call fundamental financial stress. So here at Hiram, they say they saw this coming a while ago when they were trying to refinance their debt. So they're doing what they call the new liberal arts. They've done away with some of the less popular, less career-oriented majors like religious studies. And instead, they're moving to things like career-oriented things like criminal justice, requiring students to do internships before they graduate. This has not been without some pain. They have cut about 20% of the faculty over the last several years, a lot of it through attrition, as they continue to try and retool. But they feel like this is a model for the future, and the rest of higher ed, guys, will be watching.
All right, Scott, thank you very much. For more on the sustainability of high college tuition, let's bring in our guests. Joining us right now is Neil McCluskey, Cato Institute's Center for Educational Freedom Director, and Andre Perry, Brookings Institution's Metropolitan Policy Program Fellow. Gentlemen, I think we can all agree that college tuition is soaring, whether you're looking at private colleges or even public in some cases. What would you do to try and bring down cost? Andre, what do you think?
Yeah, the first thing we really need to do is do a reset. I was a college administrator for years, and I've never seen a college tuition hike a president didn't like. When something went wrong in the College of Natural Sciences, they lifted tuition for the entire student body. At some point, we need to control costs and set caps or limits on how much you can raise tuition, and that's why I'm supportive of states that are trying to bring more transparency to the college financial crisis.
Andre, yeah. How do you think government subsidies for loans has impacted tuition increases, making it very easy for students to borrow money even if they're not otherwise able to afford it?
Well, you called it. Because of there's so much cash in terms of the federal government allowing folks to take out loans, the colleges acquiesce and rise their tuition prices. And that's a core part of the problem. Certainly, there are other issues. There's wage stagnation and other issues, particularly with low-income black and brown communities that where they're not able to afford rising prices. But as long as colleges can raise their tuition, they will, and that's a problem.
Neil, how would you address it?
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the evidence is pretty clear that
colleges are always looking for money because they always see something they think is important to do. Mm-hmm. And as long as the federal government supplies lots of loans and also grants, but the loans are the biggest problems, and tax credits and lots of other aid to students, the schools will always look to those students as a source of funding. The other thing is colleges are also sort of caught because students with a lot of money available to them often tend to demand from a school some expensive things. That's why we see water parks in some colleges. And a college often feels they need to supply those things or they don't get the students. And those small liberal arts colleges have the toughest time doing that.
Do colleges have to go through a crisis in order to fix this problem? I spoke to a president of a Catholic college who told me he expects half of Catholic colleges to close over the next decade.
Neil?
Yeah, well, I mean, a crisis always tends to focus people, and higher education, I think, is no different. If they can continue on doing what they've always done, they're going to tend to do that, and they need some sort of shock to change what they're doing.
Neil, Andre, I want to thank you both for your time today. It's good to see you.
Thanks.
Really said a water park?
Yeah, well, and high-end gyms, like all kinds of stuff.
You know what you need? A monorail.
Fancy.
That's the show for today. On our rundown tomorrow, billionaire investor, philanthropist, Home Depot co-founder, and frequent debater on Squawk Box, Ken Langone. Plus, more sharing?
I don't know why I'm getting a little teary, but we're really opening up here. Next time, we're going to couch out here for you.
Stay tuned. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.